Chapter 65. She had lived for the most part in the country, and never read the parliamentary debates. She was little versed in these particular refinements of civilized life. Accordingly, when she had gained her bedchamber, bolted herself in, and began to meditate on the scene she had just witnessed, the most terrific pictures of slaughter and destruction presented themselves to her imagination. Among which, a full-length portrait of Mr. Peter Magnus borne home by four men, with the embellishment of a whole barrelful of bullets in his left side, was among the very least. The more the middle-aged lady meditated, the more terrified she became, and at length she determined to repair to the house of the principal magistrate of the town, and request him to secure the persons of Mr. Pickwick and Mr. Tubman without delay. To this decision the middle-aged lady was impelled by a variety of considerations, the chief of which was the incontestable proof it would afford of her devotion to Mr. Peter Magnus, and her anxiety for his safety. She was too well acquainted with his jealous temperament to venture the slightest allusion to the real cause of her agitation on beholding Mr. Pickwick, and she trusted to her own influence and power of persuasion with the little man to quell his boisterous jealousy, supposing that Mr. Pickwick were removed, and no fresh quarrel could arise. Filled with these reflections, the middle-aged lady arrayed herself in her bonnet and shawl, and repaired to the mayor's dwelling straightway. Now George Nupkins Esquire, the principal magistrate aforesaid, was as grand a personage as the fastest walker would find out, between sunrise and sunset, on the 21st of June, which being, according to the almanacs, the longest day in the whole year, would naturally afford him the longest period for his search. On this particular morning, Mr. Nupkins was in a state of the utmost excitement and irritation, for there had been a rebellion in the town. All the day scholars at the largest day school had conspired to break the windows of an obnoxious apple seller, and had hooted the beadle, and pelted the constabulary and elderly gentleman in top boots, who had been called out to repress the tumult, and who had been a peace officer, man and boy, for half a century at least. And Mr. Nupkins was sitting in his easy chair, frowning with majesty, and boiling with rage, when a lady was announced on pressing private and particular business. Mr. Nupkins looked calmly terrible, and commanded that the lady should be shown in, which command, like all the mandates of emperors, and magistrates, and other great potentates of the earth, was forthwith obeyed, and Miss Witherfield, interestingly agitated, was ushered in accordingly. Muzzle! Apostrophe apostrophe said the magistrate. Muzzle was an undersized footman, with a long body and short legs. Muzzle. Apostrophe apostrophe yes, your worship. Apostrophe, plus a chair, and leave the room. Apostrophe, yes, your worship. Apostrophe, now, ma'am, will you state your business? Apostrophe apostrophe said the magistrate. It is of a very painful kind, sir, apostrophe said Miss Witherfield. Very likely, ma'am, apostrophe said the magistrate. Compose your feelings, ma'am. Apostrophe here Mr. Nupkins looked benignant. And then tell me, what legal business brings you here, ma'am? Apostrophe here the magistrate triumphed over the man, and he looked stern again. It is very distressing to me, sir, to give this information, apostrophe said Miss Witherfield, but I fear a duel is going to be fought here. Apostrophe, here, ma'am. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the magistrate. Where, ma'am? Apostrophe, in Ipswich. Apostrophe, in Ipswich, ma'am. A duel in Ipswich. Apostrophe said the magistrate, perfectly aghast at the notion. Impossible, ma'am. Nothing of the kind can be contemplated in this town, I am persuaded. Bless my soul, ma'am, are you aware of the activity of our local magistracy? Do you happen to have heard, ma'am, that I rushed into a prize ring on the 4th of May last, attended by only 60 special constables, and, at the hazard of falling a sacrifice to the angry passions of an infuriated multitude, prohibited a pugilistic contest between the Middlesex Dumpling and the Suffolk Bantam? A duel in Ipswich, ma'am? I do not think, apostrophe said the magistrate, reasoning with himself, that any two men can have had the hardihood to plan such a breach of the peace in this town. Apostrophe, my information is, unfortunately, but too correct, apostrophe said the middle-aged lady, I was present at the quarrel. Apostrophe, it's a most extraordinary thing, apostrophe said the astounded magistrate. Muzzle. Apostrophe, yes, your worship. Apostrophe, send Mr. Jinks here, directly. Instantly. Apostrophe, yes, your worship. Apostrophe, Muzzle retired, and a pale, sharp-nosed, half-fed, shabbily clad clerk of middle age entered the room. Apostrophe Mr. Jinks, apostrophe said the magistrate. Apostrophe Mr. Jinks. Apostrophe, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Jinks. This lady, Mr. Jinks, has come here to give information of an intended duel in this town. Apostrophe, Mr. Jinks, not knowing exactly what to do, smiled a dependent smile. What are you laughing at, Mr. Jinks? Apostrophe said the magistrate. Mr. Jinks looked serious instantly. Apostrophe Mr. Jinks, apostrophe said the magistrate, you're a fool. Apostrophe Mr. Jinks looked humbly at the great man, and bit the top of his pen. You may see something very comical in this information, sir, but I can tell you this, Mr. Jinks, that you have very little to laugh at, apostrophe said the magistrate. The hungry-looking Jinx sighed, as if he were quite aware of the fact of his having very little indeed to be merry about, and, being ordered to take the lady's information, shambled to a seat, and proceeded to write it down. This man, Pickwick, is the principal, I understand? Apostrophe said the magistrate, when the statement was finished. He is, apostrophe said the middle-aged lady. And the other rioter, what's his name, Mr. Jinks? Apostrophe, Tubman, sir. Apostrophe, Tubman is the second? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, the other principal, you say, has absconded, ma'am? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, replied Miss Witherfield, with a short cough. Very well, apostrophe, said the magistrate. These are two cutthroats from London, who have come down here to destroy His Majesty's population, thinking that at this distance from the capital, the arm of the law is weak and paralyzed. They shall be made an example of. Draw up the warrants, Mr. Jinks. Muzzle. Apostrophe, yes, your worship. Apostrophe, is Crummer downstairs? Apostrophe, yes, your worship. Apostrophe, send him up. Apostrophe the obsequious Muzzle retired, and presently returned, introducing the elderly gentleman in the top boots, who was chiefly remarkable for a bottle nose, a hoarse voice, a snuff-colored surtout, and a wandering eye. Grummer, apostrophe said the magistrate. Your wash-up. Apostrophe, is the town quiet now? Apostrophe, pretty well, your wash-up, apostrophe replied Grummer. Poplar feeling has in a measure subsided. Consequence oh the boys having dispersed to cricket. Apostrophe, nothing but vigorous measures will do in these times, Grummer, apostrophe said the magistrate, in a determined manner. If the authority of the king's officers is set at naught, we must have the riot act read. If the civil power cannot protect these windows, Grummer, the military must protect the civil power, and the windows too. I believe that is a maxim of the Constitution, Mr. Jinks. Apostrophe, certainly, sir, apostrophe said Jinks. Very good, apostrophe said the magistrate, signing the warrants. Grummer, you will bring these persons before me this afternoon. You will find them at the Great White Horse. You recollect the case of the Middlesex Dumpling and the Suffolk Bantam, Grummer? Apostrophe, Mr. Grummer intimated, by a retrospective shake of the head, that he should never forget it, as indeed it was not likely he would, so long as it continued to be cited daily. This is even more unconstitutional, apostrophe said the magistrate. This is even a greater breach of the peace, and a grosser infringement of His Majesty's prerogative. I believe dueling is one of His Majesty's most undoubted prerogatives, Mr. Jinks. Expressly stipulated in Magna Charta, sir, said Mr. Jinks. One of the brightest jewels in the British crown, wrung from His Majesty by the barons, I believe, Mr. Jinks? Said the magistrate. Just so, sir, replied Mr. Jinks. Very well, said the magistrate, drawing himself up proudly, it shall not be violated in this portion of his dominions. Grummer, procure assistance, and execute these warrants with as little delay as possible. Muzzle. Yes, your worship. Show the lady out. Miss Witherfield retired, deeply impressed with the magistrate's learning and research. Mr. Nupkins retired to lunch. Mr. Jinks retired within himself, that being the only retirement he had, except the sofa bedstead in the small parlor which was occupied by his landlady's family in the daytime, and Mr. Grummer retired, to wipe out, by his mode of discharging his present commission, the insult which had been fastened upon himself, and the other representative of His Majesty the Beadle in the course of the morning. While these resolute and determined preparations for the conservation of the king's peace were pending, Mr. Pickwick and his friends, wholly unconscious of the mighty events in progress, had sat quietly down to dinner, and very talkative and companionable they all were. Mr. Pickwick was in the very act of relating his adventure of the preceding night, to the great amusement of his followers, Mr. Tupman especially, when the door opened, and a somewhat forbidding countenance peeped into the room. The eyes in the forbidding countenance looked very earnestly at Mr. Pickwick, for several seconds, and were to all appearance satisfied with their investigation. For the body to which the forbidding countenance belonged, slowly brought itself into the apartment, and presented the form of an elderly individual in top boots, not to keep the reader any longer in suspense. In short, the eyes were the wandering eyes of Mr. Grummer, and the body was the body of the same gentleman. Mr. Grummer's mode of proceeding was professional, but peculiar. His first act was to bolt the door on the inside. His second, to polish his head and countenance very carefully with a cotton handkerchief. His third, to place his hat, with the cotton handkerchief in it, on the nearest chair. And his fourth, to produce from the breast pocket of his coat a short truncheon, surmounted by a brazen crown, with which he beckoned to Mr. Pickwick with a grave and ghost-like air. Mr. Snodgrass was the first to break the astonished silence. He looked steadily at Mr. Grummer for a brief space, and then said emphatically, "This is a private room, sir. A private room." Mr. Grummer shook his head, and replied, "No room's private to His Majesty, when the street door's once passed. That's law. Some people maintains that an Englishman's house is his castle. That's gammon." The Pickwickians gazed on each other with wondering eyes. "Which is Mr. Tupman?" Inquired Mr. Grummer. He had an intuitive perception of Mr. Pickwick. He knew him at once. "My name's Tupman," said that gentleman. "My name's Law," said Mr. Grummer. "What?" said Mr. Tupman. "Law," replied Mr. Grummer. "Law, civil power, and executive. Them's my titles. Here's my authority. Blank Tupman, blank Pickwick against the peace of our sovereign lord the king stated in the case made and purwited and all regular. I apprehend you, Pickwick. Tupman the aforesaid." "What do you mean by this insolence?" said Mr. Tupman, starting up. "Leave the room. Apostrophe, apostrophe, hollow, apostrophe, said Mr. Grummer, retreating very expeditiously to the door, and opening it an inch or two, doubly. Apostrophe, well, apostrophe, said a deep voice from the passage. Come forward, doubly. Apostrophe, at the word of command, a dirty-faced man, something over 6 feet high, and stout in proportion, squeezed himself through the half-open door, making his face very red in the process, and entered the room. Is the other specials outside, doubly? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Grummer. Mr. Doubly, who was a man of few words, nodded assent. Order in the division under your charge, doubly, apostrophe, said Mr. Grummer. Mr. Doubly did as he was desired, and half a dozen men, each with a short truncheon and a brass crown, flocked into the room. Mr. Grummer pocketed his staff, and looked at Mr. Doubly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.